got a play call.
You're listening to the best of the Commanders.
And it is good. Washington wins.
A weekly mix of 106.7 The Fan and 980 The Team's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
All right, so we wanted to talk some Commanders here. We have some audio of Todd McShay. He joined Craig Hoffman on the Team 980 yesterday. That's a little bit of a longer clip, but this is Todd McShay talking about the Commanders draft and what he liked about it.
For people that may not know, I mean, Todd McShay used to be with ESPN for a long, long time, right? Who's he with now? Is he just doing his own thing?
I'm not sure.
I believe so.
He's doing his own thing?
I think he does stuff with The Ringer, too.
Oh, in The Ringer?
Mostly a lot of his own stuff.
But a very well-known, like, draft Nick kind of guy.
All right, so here's Todd McShay from the Craig Hoffman Show yesterday.
I just thought, the first, what, four picks, I guess it was, in my opinion, they were kind of ahead of the curve and got players, or the first three, I should say, got players that absolutely... I expected to come off the board earlier than they did. Josh Connerly at 29. I guess it wasn't that much later than what I expected, but it also was an offensive tackle run that happened fast. And when the shelf fell off, there was just nothing left, you know? We can get into all of them, but Connerly specifically, and I'm guessing people were like, well, we just brought in Laramie Tunsil and, you know, we're drafting a left tackle and he played left tackle at Oregon the last couple of years. But Connerly's 21 years old, man. Like, he's just a pup. And a lot of people in the league think, and I tend to agree, like, this is a player who, with continued, like, strength development, his core strength and continuing a little bit with the hand usage, he can develop into a really good starting left tackle. But right now, he might be a really good starting guard in the NFL. And you say, well, is that what we really want to spend in the first round pick? And my answer is, like, look at where some of the guards went. You know, we had a guard taken at 12 in Tyler Booker. We had another one in Zabel. We had Donovan Jackson all going the first round. And again, like, Laramie Tunsil is a great player. Laramie Tunsil turns 31 years old in August, and he's on his third team. And so this may not be – it is a tremendous signing, and it may be a tremendous signing and acquisition and, an asset for this team, especially with a young star quarterback. There's nothing more important than protecting him. But it may only – maybe it's only for a couple of years, and maybe you're developing Josh Connerly. And also, don't forget, Sam Cosmi is coming off of the surgery. And, you know, it's pointing towards he'll be ready, but until you know. And so if the best asset in this organization is Jaden Daniels, you better be prepared to protect him and you better have backup plans. And so if you draft maybe a starting guard or a guy who can play multiple positions along your line at 21 years old and can develop him, you know, the fastest 10-yard split of any offensive lineman this past year, you watch him, like, ultra
for a
quick
second.
Feet.
Hold on for a second. Can you stop it for a second, Ben? This is great, but I want to hear what he has to say about the other guys, too. Does he get to it, Drab? He's doing like 10 minutes just on Connerly.
He just keeps going and going.
On Connerly? I want to hear him about Amos.
Who do you want? We have Amos
and then I want to hear kind of his... Listen, I should have said this to you before. I would like to hear a little of his analysis on each of the top couple guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. Amos. I want to hear what he has to say about the tech receivers. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that part comes down to the medical team and what they like. What does that entail? Is that it's going to be something that is hindering him? Is that something that, like, we're worried about the long term? And obviously, you know, the organization, when it comes to medical and it comes to you know, the character can be different. When it's the medical, you have the scouting combine, then you have the combine rechecks. Each team has their own doctors, and there's very few things that get past NFL teams from a medical standpoint. What is the difference from organization to organization is what they deem acceptable, right? And so for one team, it could be take them off the board. I'm not saying Amos specifically. I'm saying in general. A certain injury could be take him off the board. Another one could be, well, we value the first and second round picks as, you know, we have to hit on starters, and if this is a concern for the first, you know. So there's different medical standards for each team. What I can tell you is that there was some back information that came out, and I don't know how late you want to call it, but I also know that most evaluators had him late first, early second. You know, and it's a guy who played 34 games at Louisiana Lafayette, transferred to Alabama, kind of just, and I give him a lot of credit, man. It's kind of like, it didn't work out here, moving on, and then came to Ole Miss in 13 starts, and played his best ball.
Mike's dead.
A lot has come out, you know, in the last few days about the drafting process. One thing which has jumped out to me is, you know, Peters went on with Pat McAfee, and he talked about the R&D department that they have. Mm-hmm. They have 12 guys who are analytics guys who were recommending a lot of these picks. And look, McShay seems to like the picks. They felt, you know, they had a commander's caucus too, which apparently when they drafted Lane, everybody on Saturday morning had to submit who they thought would be their favorite pick of the day. And the consensus, the caucus, was that that's who they were going to go for. And then he fell to him and was available and they picked him. So it's a lot of thought in these picks.
I love it. Does he talk more about, do you have anything about Lane?
Yeah.
I really would have started off the show this way. Instead of Connerly, I should have jumped. I love Jalen Lane, man. I love him. I know he's 5'9¾", but he's well-built at 191. He's got longer arms. He ran a 4.34. Listen to this. You ready? You probably heard it at this point. You probably heard everything about him. But no wide receiver in the past decade at the Combine has posted a better trio of results in the 40, which he ran a 4.34, the broad jump, 11 foot, and the 3 cone. And so you're talking the top end speed. The broad jump is the lower body explosiveness. And then the 3 cone is the change of direction, body control, stop, start, all, you know, like, and then you watch him on tape. And here's the thing, like, Jalen Lane he began his career at Middle Tennessee State. And then obviously wound up in Virginia Tech in 2023. He was the best receiver. His numbers just sucked because they didn't have a quarterback throwing the ball. He combined for 79 catches, just over 1,000 yards. But when you look at what he had to do in order to get that production, it was like bubble screens, quick game, reverses. Like the return game, he's outstanding. He was 26 nationally in combined kick return yards going back to 2021. And ranked second nationally in punt return average with 15.5 back at MTSU. So this guy does a little bit of everything. He's really good with the ball in his hands. Like, that's where he's excellent. I think he might be the most underrated wide receiver from this entire class. Mm. And then I think about him in Cliff's system.
Wow. I love the fact that you're adding just a quick, twitchy, versatile guy to the offense. It's just going to be another chess piece or Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah.
Just another piece to add along to Debo Samuel and Terry McLaurin. And
look, like you said, and I saw Jalen Lane play every single game at Virginia Tech for 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's very frustrating to watch them because over the 2 years, like McShay said, they just struggled to get the ball in the air consistently. And they struggled to find receivers when they were open. Those guys would just wait a little too long.
Well, that's not going to happen here.
Jalen Lane was, when he got the ball, especially in open field, was really good.
Well, I was going to say, did you think he was special and it was just a shame at the time, or did you not realize how good he was because he wasn't getting it enough?
His first year, which would have been his fourth year in college, but his first year, I thought, okay, he's pretty good. I remember him dropping a couple balls in some big spots, but his final year, his senior year, his fifth year playing college, I thought, you know what? Man, if they just had a legit quarterback, if he was playing like in Alabama or Georgia or Ole Miss or somewhere in the SEC,
he'd be
putting up some serious numbers.
Well, he led the team in catches with 38.
Right. Exactly.
He's getting married this summer. That jumped out at me.
Okay.
Bold. Yeah, good for him. Young love.
Well, now he's got a super accurate stud quarterback throwing him the ball. So that accuracy and in poor quarterback issue, that's not going to translate to the pros.
If he's on the field as a receiver much, I think he's primarily going to be a returner.
I think he's going to be utilized as a receiver more than you probably think.
This is also a future pick because, you know, Debo, who knows if he's going to be here long term.
Sure.
You know, McLaurin's obviously, he's not old, but he's 28, 29. So this could be a future pick.
Right.
You know, Jalen Lane could be a guy that they do have in 5, 6, 7 years.
I think he's going to show enough flashes during the OTAs and training camps where Cliff's going to be like, I need to get this guy incorporated. Now, I'm not going to go crazy and bet on wide receiver catch numbers for him as a rookie because I always get in trouble with that. But I think he's going to have a nice little role in the offense.
Everyone keeps saying that Cliff is going to love him as a gadget guy at first.
Yeah.
You know, to blend him in there. He is the one of the four, you know, they have what, 5 picks? He's the one that jumps out at you as, wow, he really could surprise you and make a play or two.
Yeah.
You know, the other guys, you know, certainly at 1 and 2, you expect those guys to have immediate impact. But he's like the fun one.
Yeah.
You know,
he's the shiny toy you get excited for.
And then I am a little bit interested in the 7th rounder from Arizona, the kid that played one game.
Sure. You like his metrics.
Imagine how good you must be if you played one game and one East Shrine and they still used a draft pick on you.
Right. They obviously liked what they saw when they one fired game. Up your tape.
Now, I know he had other tape.
Yeah.
But in the last year, he played one game.
Right.
So that he's kind of intriguing, too. Jacory Kroski-Merritt.
Are we a week away from the schedule release?
May 14th.
Yes, correct. Oh, that's gonna be such a great day. What day is that?
Next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday.
So less than a week away.
So next Thursday, a week from today, we'll do our first run through of the dubs and losses.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Grant and Danny's favorite bit.
Sure.
They hate that, but how can you not?
It's a cornerstone of this program.
Most humans, they look at the schedule, they go, all right, winner, loser, winner.
Right. Yeah, of course.
Brian Billick did it on the Hard Knocks.
All it is,
I know you so well, I knew you were going to bring that up.
I mean, of course.
All it is human nature to want to pick wins and losses.
Yeah.
That's all.
And your opinion changes. Of course, your opinion changes as your information changes, as the teams make different moves. And then, of course, there's always the X factor of nobody knows. But it is fun to pick. It's fun to guess.
Of course. I'm trying to get you guys to do the schedule pool that we have.
Mm-hmm. I don't care when they play whoever. It means nothing to me.
I know. It's just a bit for the show.
I know, but it's hard to get excited for a bit that I literally have zero passion for.
You don't care about most of the betting bits we do.
By the way, thanks to Craig Hoffman for letting us steal his interview with Todd McShay. Some really good nuggets in there.
Right.
It's good booking. Well done.
I'm also intrigued by the way, the receiver they signed. Where was he, Jason? At Ole Miss in his last year? They signed him as a free agent. He's a little longer receiver.
Oh, yeah. You mean Jacory Brooks?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued by him, too. Now, I know JP says, man, we always talk about the 7th and 8th receivers. Okay. I'm not saying he's going to be a star, but maybe he can make the team and have 20 catches. That's fine. That'd be cool.
Here's what else I need more of in 2025. Need more Luke McCaffrey and need more Ben Sinnott.
But why are you going to get more Luke McCaffrey if you've got more Jalen Lane?
I need more of all of them.
Well, I would think the drafting
of Jalen Lane turns up the heat on McCaffrey.
Good.
It does, but it
just if you believe Lane is going to be a receiver.
Well, I think he's certainly going to compete right off the bat in punt returns and maybe kick returns.
I don't think you just draft a guy at that spot just to be a kick returner.
No. I think that's the initial impact.
Sure. Yeah. They'll throw him out of kick returns, but I think they have plans to utilize him in the offense, too. Yeah.
I agree. But I think that Luke will get the first crack at it.
Yeah.
And it'll see if he can produce.
And Jacory Brooks, who you were asking about, he went to Louisville. He transferred from Alabama to Louisville.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. I don't know why I said Ole Miss.
You're thinking of Trey Amos.
When we come back, we'll talk Caps Canes with Tim Donnelly. He hosts Afternoon Drive on the Fan in Raleigh. He's going to join us next to talk about Game 2 between the Canes and the Caps. Bank local, cheer local. In business, every day is game day. Business is always moving up or down, but never still. That's why the Main Street Bank team treats every day like game day. Main Street Bank is a business-focused Community Bank, proudly serving the DMV since 2004. Visit mstreetbank.com to learn how to put our team in your office. Main Street Bank, member FDIC, equal housing opportunity lender.
I know why. Why, man? Sing it, Jeff. Long but quick, the Jeff Walker story.
Scotty singing that.
Scotty's just butt crazy.
Scotty thing, the wild card, and Scotty Jeff story. Have a chance in hell of being within 48 strokes of you and I. They're crazy.
They're crazy. This morning, let's back up a little. Much has been said and discussed about the proposal to rebuild RFK Stadium and to get a NFL stadium there, the Commanders moving in.
Mm-hmm.
I think a number of things make this version of this discussion much different than previous times. The absolute top of the list, ownership change.
Why?
The new owners are, by all accounts, stand-up people, right? Like, and they do things the right way. And they have deep pockets and a lot of connections. This is a different world. Two, the team's good all of a sudden. I think Jaden Daniels is a factor in this.
It makes a world of difference.
But beyond that, a huge part of this is that the owners are putting up a boatload of cash. Yeah. They're putting up somewhere between $2.5 and $3 billion, okay? That, to me, changes things. It is not, like, the phrase, put your money where your mouth is, they're doing it. And so, there was a lot of excitement the first day, the announcement at the press club with Mayor Bowser and Josh Harris and Roger Goodell. And then, inevitably, there are questions, opposition, pushback. What I find fascinating is there has been discussion that folks that don't live in the city shouldn't weigh in on this, which I think is kind of silly. But what the Post did, and I applaud them for doing this, is they did a survey of D.C. residents,
mm-hmm.
how they feel about using city money to pay for a new Commander Stadium. And the results, to me, are pretty darn significant. 55% of D.C. residents favor it. 55% of D.C. residents favor it.
This is one thing that I have a problem with, the way that question was stated anyway. 55%, you got the majority, yes. But they're not building the stadium. See, that's the difference. That money is being used for infrastructure, which is going to have to be built whether the stadium is there or not. Am I right?
Yeah. Not to that level,
but
yes.
The team comes in with $2.7 billion, you know, and if that's all theirs or the league put in some, whatever. But you're going to have to spend $500 to $750 million anyway, whether the stadium is there or not. But I think that a lot of people who like to sit up here and tell us stuff, politicians, they may not even much talk to their constituents.
I find that very interesting you say that, B. Just so we're clear, this is a Washington Post Char poll. This is a legitimately well-run, well-done poll. It's a random sampling of 651 adult residents of D.C. And the poll was conducted from April 22nd to May 4th. So last time I put out poll data, I had critics say, oh, well, you know, where'd that poll come from, right? Like, this one is from the Post. This is not from the mayor's office or an opposition office. This is what should be an unbiased poll. What I find far more interesting, and honestly, this conversation has gone on my entire life. As someone who has lived here and lived in Northeast for a decade, like, it's not that hard to see where portions of the city are really developed and where they aren't.
Uh-huh.
And development over the course of my life has certainly spread eastward in the city. Cap One Arena started it, Nats Park, Audi Field, yeah. The Wharf. Residents of Ward 7 and 8. So the stadium will be built in Ward 7, 8's just across the river, where there is a true lack of development, stunted development.
Yeah.
Residents of Ward 7 and 8 support public money for the infrastructure to build a new stadium 63%.
Mm.
Those east of the Anacostia River polled 74% support. It's almost like the people that live in the areas that haven't gotten development are like, hell yeah, we want this development, this gigantic project.
Then we wouldn't have to drive so far to get to stuff.
I also find this pretty interesting. Of black residents polled, 62% support. White, it's 53%, so it's still a majority. The only wards where you don't have a majority supporting are 3 and 4. This to me, and what is really imperative to consider, and this is from the Post. This is like, I know this, and I've said this, but people question it because I'm getting my data from the presentation, which the mayor and the NFL and the Commanders were a part of. So if you want to be skeptical of that, you can be. I understand. This is from the Washington Post. They are reporting this. I'm sure they have checked this out to be true. Otherwise, it wouldn't be here, right? Democracy dies in darkness. This is what the mayor said, and this is what the Post is writing today. Under the terms unveiled last week, the district would help fund stadium infrastructure, parking facilities, and recreation improvements. The largest chunk of its contribution, $500 million, would come from the sports facilities fee, formerly the ballpark fee, a tax on businesses earning $5 million or more. Let's be clear. That money is only paid by a handful of businesses in this town.
Mm-hmm.
Further, that money already was earmarked to build Nats Park, which has more than exponentially repaid the public investment.
Totally.
And they're not taking this money. It's not like, yo, we're taking the money from the schools and we're building roads for the stadium. This is going from Nats Park to RFK Stadium. $500 million. DC would also invest $200 million for utilities infrastructure, roadways, and a metro transit study. Well, guess what, folks? That 200 mil, you'd have to spend it anyway. Whatever you're putting in there, you tell me what you don't have to spend, B. If you're going to develop a 180-acre site,
you're going to have to spend.
Utilities infrastructure, you have to spend on that?
Yeah, definitely.
Roadways? Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And a metro transit study?
Definitely.
Yeah. As an aside, before WMATA wades into this and inevitably the price tag goes up, those metro stops supported NFL games and big concerts for, what, 30 years, 25 years? Yep. I don't know why we're convinced they can't do them now. Maybe you got to repaint, but you know, maybe you got to do a little bit. I don't understand why people are convinced you need more metro. Like, it's already there. It worked for years. I wrote it. I don't get that. But
so the two wards that oppose it, they're not affected by it, to be honest with you. They're way on the other side. They got everything they want. They have grocery stores right there. They have a lot of stuff, and they get better police protection over there. Why are you mad at it, some other place getting better? Because it'll bring a little bit more oof to the area. Why are they so bad against it?
I mean, wards 3 and 4 are probably the wealthiest in the city. I don't know, maybe 2 because that's Georgetown and stuff. I don't know those answers. What happens
is Chevy Chase, Glover Park, and Tinley Town. And then you have Shepherd Park, Fort Totten, and Brightwood.
What I have noticed in life, and I'm not making this specific to anything, is you get people, a lot of times the more educated you are, the more you want to be offended on behalf of other people. Let other people make up their minds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, of the money that is currently constituted in this Post story, which I think adds up to about $900 million, $500 million of it is from a ballpark fee that already exists. They're just renaming it to sports facilities fee. That's how they built Nats Park. $200 million is going to be for utilities, roadways, and metro. They'd have to spend that anyway.
Yeah.
And then there's another $181 million that's coming from Events DC, which is the convention and sports authority for DC. And their money is specifically built for this. That's why that
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not a company, but that's why that entity what they exists.
Do, when people roll in town, everybody that lays in the bed or spends money, they earn their tax money from that thing right there. So it's about when you get people to come into the city, spend a little time, spend a little money, they make theirs that way. And a lot of that is from people from outside of the district. It's not from people inside the district.
I like this quote a lot. This is from Wayne Young. This is in the Washington Post story. I tweeted this out this morning. If you want to check it out, it's worth checking out. Wayne Young is a 65-year-old Ward 7 resident, is not a fan of the Commanders, but finds the proposal exciting and isn't frightened by the use of city money for the project. What frightens me is that people don't speak of the revenue it will generate. So the reality is people need a balance between the revenue spent and the revenue that it will generate. What I want to hear more is the other part to see what the balance is. The part that is not discussed is the revenue it will bring in the short term and the long term. I understand there are questions. I understand you want to get the best possible deal for the city. I understand that if you live over there, there will be periods of inconvenience due to construction.
Yeah.
You drive around the city and the surrounding suburbs.
I drive in every day. I got periods of inconvenience from where I live all the way here.
Has anybody driven through Tyson's lately? Like... I understand there are always going to be people resistant to change.
Because change sometimes make things begin to be a little bit more equal.
There's already a stadium there.
Let's be real.
What did you think was going to happen?
I go back to what you and I read in that paper. When those 100 senators voted on 100-0, and they put some things of which they would like to see a hope. And if they have a little control over some things, and they put number one with stadium, right?
First bullet point. I think
I'll keep going back to that bullet point.
When we come back, let's talk about the George Pickens trade and what that does to the NFL landscape. Nobody go anywhere. It's B. Mitch Finley.
Wilson hooks a pass, looking, end zone! George Pickens climbs the ladder for the touchdown. Wilson to Pickens is potent.
We're live at an empty Nats Park in the left field concourse. Grant and Danny with you on the Fan for another hour. We'll take you up to 6:30 tonight. I am so happy about the Dallas Cowboys trading for George Pickens. I just can't see through my giddiness. In fact, I'm so happy. I wish I had a twin brother I could share it with. That's how excited I am. This is a problem child. This is a selfish football player. This is an extremely skilled, talented, bit of a head case, I would say, that Mike Tomlin couldn't get through or fix. But I think Brian Schottenheimer's the guy for the job. What could possibly go wrong? It was just this past December, Danny Hutier, when the Pittsburgh Steelers were gunning for the postseason, and in their Christmas Day game, he showed up less than 90 minutes before kickoff, and Mike Tomlin had to say, not today, young man.
You don't get to play.
Just so you guys know, 4 hours or so before kickoff is when the early risers get there, but, you know, within 3.5 or so hours is probably when you should post. He was under 90 minutes before kickoff, waddling through the locker room for the biggest game of their season. Very skilled player. Led the NFL in yards per catch in 2023. 900 yards receiving on just 59 grabs last year. 15 a pop. Go balls. He's athletic on the sideline. It's a lot of back shoulder stuff. It's a lot of slants that he can make plays in the middle of the field, run away from people on, boxing them out with his size. He's a big receiver who even plays bigger than 6'3 and 200. So you're going, where's the catch, Grant? Here's the catch. And if you listen to this show for any period of time, this will be the least surprising thing ever. Not on my team.
Oh.
George Pickens, giant pain in the ass, can play for someone else. He could go catch 60 for 1,100 maybe for someone else. Not on my team. He's someone else's headache. And today, he became the Dallas Cowboys headache. And I am thrilled about it.
So this, I think, is the fundamental difference between you and I. I'm 100% with you that I don't want him. This is not a... Oh, Washington should have traded for George Pickens. Not what I'm saying at all. I would not say that because everything you're saying is correct.
He can't play for me.
Yeah, it's going to melt down and it's going to implode. All I can think about, though, is the fact that he'll probably be available twice against Washington and he'll probably be awesome. And it made their offense, at least at times, formidable. And it's a great compliment to CeeDee Lamb opposite him. and I'm terrified of it. Again, big picture, it's going to end terribly. It does, because that's who's involved here. But there's going to be a time where it hasn't ended terribly yet. And I feel like that time will be like they'll do that schedule when it comes out where they play Washington twice in 3 weeks, some kind of weird divisional thing, and he's going to torch us. That's the first thing I thought of. I don't want my rival to have him. I also don't want him either. That's where I'm at.
He had his third best game of the season last year by way of yards against Washington. He had 5 for 91 and a touchdown in Landover at Northwest Stadium. He only had two games better than that. He went for 113 against the Colts on the road and 111 at home against the Jets. He's a good football player, and you are right. He is a problem when you have to defend his size in the middle of the field and the back shoulder stuff. If they had a quarterback that I worried about throwing him the football in Pittsburgh, could have been a real issue for teams for years to come, and they just didn't. Mason Rudolph's going to be their starter right now. If it was Rodgers, by the way, the back shoulder throw makes to George Pickens, I actually thought that would have been one of the best fits ever.
I mean, he's got some DeAndre Hopkins to his
totally
with that kind of stuff. The touch tap radius on the sideline. Oh, yep. Yeah.
He's got a little bit of that. But you're thinking about the best parts. About when he is yelling at the receivers coach? Mm-hmm. What about he's showing up 87 minutes before kickoff? What about when he's getting ejected because he's fighting with a corner because he's putting himself over the team because he's tackling someone behind the play? Mike Tomlin has made a career of getting guys to act better in Pittsburgh than in other places. Mm-hmm. And they have had these malcontent types that were issues other spots. Like, and even at the end of their runs there, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, whatever. Ben Roethlisberger, by the way, look at his track record.
Sure.
He ain't a saint. I don't think he's in the running for Pope coming up at the conclave.
It's a good bet.
But Mike Tomlin makes it work. He didn't want to deal with this guy anymore. He threw his hands up and said, let's go get a draft pick. And by the way, they gave up a third for him.
Yeah.
I love this so much. Does it make their offense better? Absolutely. Did they need a weapon? For sure. Are they a scarier team to defend? Yes. But I would bet I'm looking at my wallet.
Is it the farm?
No, I'm not giving up my Pupatello VIP card.
I was going to say, would you bet the Pupatello card?
The Pupatello VIP card is the most valuable thing in my wallet. We are making good use of that Pupatello.
I actually tend to agree with you. Yeah.
I got no money, actually. So we got.
You never carry cash.
Yeah, but I also have no money also.
Okay. Would you bet the Pupatello gift card?
No. Stop saying that.
Under any circumstance.
I don't want you to say that anymore. It's just not a nice thing to bring up. I'm going to bet lunch. I'll take you and the boys to Walters.
Oh.
If he is not either kicked out of a game, benched, or involved in some controversy with a teammate or coach this year. I think all of those things, one of them on my bingo card is a lock.
Yeah, I think you're going to get bingo. I mean, it's the George Pickens special. It's the bonanza. But the in-between parts is what I'm terrified of. Like the games that he's going to perform well, because those are coming too. So you're right. It's going to end terribly. And I know it'll be a crash and burn situation in Dallas. And they don't have a culture strong enough to kind of deal with that, whatever this is right now, this minute, especially with first-year head coach in Brian Schottenheimer.
I think Schottenheimer's the right guy to get through to him.
Yeah, I love this.
I mean, he is such a skilled, wonderful, deserving head coach. He's, what would you say, top three in the league, top five in the league?
Top three with the last name Schottenheimer,
I think. Definitely entrusting him with a mercurial head case of a player. Why wouldn't I? Yeah. I mean, he runs a room better than anybody.
It's his third year in the league talking about Pickens. So, you know, it's potential contract time. So who knows? Maybe this is the just straight and narrow guy. My point is, I'm terrified of what it means for the matchup against Washington. That's the only part I can think about. But in general, I can also say that that's one plate I'm spinning. I've got it spinning right here in my left hand.
And that,
in my right hand,
that's just always going to be a thing.
Yes.
Someone's playing the Commanders, you're nervous.
Yes, especially someone that's good.
If the Caps weren't playing the Canes, and for some reason they allowed the Blackhawks to play them in the second round, you'd go, I just don't like this.
I don't like it.
Not good.
I don't like it.
That's the your heart as a fan. So that's part of it is you know he's going to go 4 for 97 in a touch against the Commanders once, and you have to start with that.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a lot of 2 for 26s in there.
And there's going to be some tantrums, some throwing of things. Yeah, there's all the issues are coming. So I both relish in the potential suffering of Cowboy fans who should repent and reform immediately. You're all wrong. If you've never been to Dallas, you should be embarrassed. But the second part is I'm terrified of what it means for those couple times he plays Washington.
I want the Cowboys to do more stuff like this. I want them to get back to the early 90s.
Just be
The stuff that they wrote about in those chapters of that Cowboys Empire book, like barbershops and craziness where people were just doing wacky things.
A little stabby.
No, let's not. Is that what happened in the barbershop?
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was like some inappropriate behavior stuff.
Well, I was thinking about Michael Irvin stabbing a guy.
Well, that's pretty bad, too. Now, I don't want anyone getting stabbed. I need Cowboys yelling at each other on the sideline. Like the old Greg Hardy shoving a coach. Just everyone's angry. And Brian Schottenheimer's the man responsible.
He's holding it all together.
Keeping everybody
together. He's holding it together.
One of the funniest press conferences of all time. Schottenheimer actually did a pretty nice job. I watched every minute of it. Jerry, oh boy. I would have paid to watch Jerry in that press conference. This is the team that you want to do poorly, and that press conference is an indication that this person is incapable of running a football team.
Yeah, this is our plan. This is what we're going to do. So, fart noise.
By the way, Brian Schottenheimer is the head coach of the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Have we mentioned that?
That's a good FYI. That's right.
I just thought I forgot about that for a couple months, and now that it's May 7th, it's a good time to remind everyone. But Pickens, what about what they gave up? Third-round pick this coming year, and then a fifth-round pick for the draft
for next
year, DC in 2027.
Pretty good competition if you're Pittsburgh for a guy that you didn't want to deal with anymore, right? I mean, but for Dallas, they're desperate that you have to turn over different stones than you normally like to. And I think that was the case here, where they just need something. They need an injection of life on that side of the ball, especially.
The words might change the next time they're back in RFK, but that was the final time Hail to the Redskins was played at RFK Stadium back in December of 1996. The plans are to move back to RFK. What is pending is DC City Council approval. 7 votes required. We had Phil Mendelson, the DC City Council chair, on the show on Friday. He believes, with more information, that he and the city council can cut a better deal with the team than the mayor came up with. We shall see. Interesting polling news from the Washington Post just a little while ago. They released the results of a poll that they conducted, a Washington Post Schar School poll. The Schar School is the George Mason, arm of their school. They polled 651 D.C. residents. Right. These are residents of the District of Columbia asking the question, would you favor or oppose the district government using about $850 million in city funds to help finance development for a new football stadium for the Washington Commanders, where RFK Stadium now stands in D.C.? 55% favor it. A majority of D.C. residents polled favor a stadium at the RFK site. 39% opposed it. 6% had no opinion or skipped the question as part of, I'm sure, several questions they had on this poll/survey. Now, a couple of things. Number one, $850 million is not the number. The poll question was asked when the number appeared to be $850 million, and which would be the city's cost for the new property and the new development of the RFK site. We know now that it will be north of $1 billion. But the question was asked when it was still thought to be $850 million. Obviously, if the Post had the $1 billion figure, they would have used that. I do wonder, because there is a big difference, maybe not in the amount, but in the appearance, the presentation of the dollar amount, if the question were asked, would you favor or oppose the district government using about $1.1 billion in city funds to help finance development of a new football stadium at RFK. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I bet the numbers might be a little bit different, but maybe still a majority, maybe slightly less, although it's barely a majority. But still, 55% in a city where typically taxpayers are not for
you know, giving money, taxpayer money, to billionaire owners to help them build their stadiums is a, you know, a number that's encouraging and a number that could be influencing to city council members. Interestingly, part of the story that the Post put out there is that when city residents were polled about the Capital One $500 million investment to keep Capital One or to renovate Capital One, 64% were in favor of that. Now, it's less money. It was also an arena that already existed there. There was a clear understanding, I think, of D.C. residents on what Capital One, you know, not being there and what that area might end up looking like. That there was concern there. We're talking about an entity that currently does not exist in D.C. But still, I think 55%, even though I think $850 million, which is not the number, it'll be more like $1.1 billion, unless, of course, the city council's able to negotiate with the mayor or without the mayor, with the team directly or with, you know, indirectly, a better deal and less of an expenditure. But, you know, it's still, I think, a favorable result. And doesn't necessarily surprise me. I think most people in the city recognize what this kind of a stadium would do and what the property, what that 175 acres or whatever it is, it's close to that, would look like beyond just the vertical stadium structure. Because we know what it looks like now. You know, not everybody knows what it looks like now. If you don't come into D.C., if you don't live in D.C. and you haven't driven down to that part of the city, it's not attractive. And you're only a couple of blocks away from very attractive. So it'd be nice to see that area resuscitated. And I think the stadium and the stadium project would do that. Of course, there are people that would argue there are plenty of things you could do that would not include a stadium that would make that area look great and make it economically viable. But anyway, so those were the results of the Post poll just put out earlier this morning. Also, football team related, Jeffrey Chihita, I think is how you pronounce his name, a writer for CBSSports.com, took the remaining NFL free agents and, you know, came up with a best fit for a team. And for Washington, he wrote that Matthew Judon, who played in Atlanta last year, played in New England before that, would be a good fit for Washington. He writes, Washington GM Adam Peters has been aggressive in each of the past two seasons when it comes to free agency. That's not necessarily true. They've signed a lot of players. They haven't been overly aggressive, you know, in free agency. Lots of players, lots of one-year deals, you know, a multi-year deal this year with Javon Kinlaw. Couple of big trades, that's for sure. Tunsil and Lattimore in the midst of the season, and obviously Deebo Samuel. But anyway, he writes, the one thing he still needs to find for this team is more help in pressuring opposing passers. The team leader in sacks from 2024, Dante Fowler Jr., returned to Dallas in this offseason, and Peters didn't take any edge rushers in the draft. That leaves Judon as an intriguing option for a team that wants to make another power move in the NFC after reaching last year's championship game. He has flaws. He turns 33 in August and only amassed 5.5 sacks in his one season with the Falcons last year. But he also fits what Peters has been finding in free agency the last couple of years. The Commanders received valuable contributions from older veterans like Bobby Wagner and Zach Ertz in 2024. If Judon can give them a little boost in the pass rush, he would be just as beneficial to Washington's hopes of reaching the Super Bowl. So, you know, we've talked about some of the available, you know, pass rushers out there. Za'Darius Smith is out there. He actually put Za'Darius Smith in Detroit. You know, you do still have the, you know, Trey Hutchinson situation in Cincinnati that has not been resolved yet. But Matthew Judon's interesting because Matthew Judon did not have a good season last year. But to be fair, Atlanta's defense for much of the year was terrible. It was a bad defense. Even when they were building up a really good record by the midway point in the season and had like a two-game lead in the NFC South, they were doing it with offense. They weren't doing it with defense. They were a bad defensive team. They got better as the season went along, but it just was there just was something systemically wrong watching Atlanta play defense last year. They were just off. And Matthew Judon did not look good. He was part of it looking off. There's another aspect to Judon's game. Judon has played most of his career with teams that play base 3-4 defenses. So, I don't know what that means. You know, can he play with his hand in the dirt as a defensive end, as an edge? Would he have to be kind of a linebacker? Would he have to be in a two-point stance? But Atlanta and New England most recently, base 3-4 defenses when he was there. I don't know if that's as much of a factor anymore. We don't see that nearly as much. Teams take it into consideration, but I don't know if that's something that you'd mark him off for. Now, Matthew Judon is 33 years old, and he's coming off a season in which he did not really light it up for Atlanta on what was a bad defense for much of the year. 2023, he was hurt. But let's not forget that in 2021 and 2022, this dude had 28 sacks in two seasons. 12.5 for New England in 2021, 15.5 in 2022. He was in that NFL top 100 players vote in, you know, heading into the 2023 season. He was voted as the 33rd best overall player in the league. He was dominant as a pass rusher in New England before he, I think it was a bicep injury in 2023 early in the season, and he missed the remainder of the year. Who knows? Maybe he was still feeling the effects of that last year in Atlanta. He did not play well in Atlanta last year. Just didn't. But the team didn't play well. They played better late. We saw it, you know, at the end of the season against Washington. They were a better defensive team, even though Washington put up 30 in overtime against them. I don't know. I mean, that would be, you know, just like I felt about some other players that have had recent injury issues. Not that Judon had one last year. Nick Chubb did. By the way, he put Nick Chubb in Houston. Man, Mixon and Chubb. God, that's where I would look. I would definitely, on J.K. Dobbins and Nick Chubb, at least figure out whether or not they're healthy enough, because they can be had for a song right now. These are 1 year, $4-5 million deals with, you know, maybe incentives that build it up to $7 or $8 million because of the injuries. Dobbins is much younger. Chubb, I think, is just, when he's healthy, better. Asante Samuel's still out there, but, you know, I think they have hopes now for Trey Amos, you know, a corner. Anyway, Judon, a name to consider, along with Za'Darius Smith, along with Hutchinson, until that thing gets resolved. This isn't over yet, their roster construction. This will head right up until training camp and maybe even get tweaked a little bit as the preseason goes along. A preseason which we will know more about when the NFL schedule comes out a week from yesterday. My mock schedule, for those of you who have asked, I will give you my season opener on tomorrow's show at 11 a.m., and then on Monday, I'll have the entirety of my annual ridiculous Washington mock schedule. But yeah, you'll get the preseason game shortly after you get the entire NFL schedule. God, this time next week, we will be talking about a lot of late nights that are scheduled for 2025. A lot of primetime games. I bet you no less than five. When we come back, Tom Brady weighed in on Shedeur Sanders' fall and why the Raiders didn't select Shedeur Sanders, especially given that Brady had a relationship with Shedeur and Dion heading into the draft. That's next, 12 o'clock, Cody Benjamin with his quarterback NFL power rankings list. Jaden, very high on that list.
All right, last night the Boston Celtics blew another 20-point lead to the New York Knicks just to lose 91-90. They go down 2-0 in the series, heading to the Garden. That is sure to be jumping. Speaking of blown leads, the Washington Nationals get another one. They were up 3-0 heading into the sixth. Michael Soroka loads the bases and gives up three RBIs to tie the game. Jorge Lopez enters in relief to give up two more runs. And Andrew Chafin finishes off with three more runs and ending the inning to put the Nats down 8-3. Game ends 8-6. Nats have the Cardinals coming to town. They will play tomorrow. Nats on deck with Charlie and Dave at 6:15 on 106.7 The Fan. That is tomorrow. Tonight on The Fan, the Washington Capitals will take on the Carolina Hurricanes in Game 2. Spencer Carberry has said to expect lineup changes following a dreadful performance in Game 1. And it looks like Ryan Leonard is going to be scratched tonight. He got extra work after practice today, and Taylor Radish came off with the extra skaters. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1, and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. Some big news, NFL related and Washington related.
Mm-hmm. Drum roll cakes? What do you
sure.
think?
Sure. Got it right here.
We share the same brain cakes.
In the spring of 2027, Washington will host the NFL draft.
Look at that. Cool. That's big time.
That means, God willing, we're going to be a big part of that somehow.
I would think so.
Somehow we got to be down there. We got to be involved in the whole thing.
The draft is expected to be held on the National Mall.
I would think.
It'd be late, though. It'd be late night.
Official announcement scheduled to be made Monday at the White House at 1 p.m. President Donald Trump's public schedule for Monday includes a sports announcement at 1 p.m.
Sports announcement. I wonder what that could be.
Yeah.
So Goodell will be at the White House with Trump, and they'll make that announcement.
And Josh Harris, I believe, too.
And Josh Harris.
Yeah. What? Just think about it, because
Josh Harris is on a roll.
They're on a heater because they're going to, you know, get this new stadium, presumably, and then immediately after that, they're going to announce the Super Bowl that they're going to get. Right, a couple years after that, it's almost like a given. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's
with
like,
a new stadium,
it'd almost be kind of like written in their rules, right? If you get a new stadium, you
it's
get
pretty
a Super
much
Bowl.
Been the way it's been. Yeah.
So I mean, they're going to have the draft, which is the center of the sports world. I'm sorry, it's the center of the sports world's attention.
Yep.
For 2-3 days, I know it's 3 days. People don't care as much about the third day, but for 3 days, you're going to be the center of the attention, and then in a few years after that, you're going to get the Super Bowl.
Yep.
So
how cool is that?
Super heater right now.
This is how big it is for the economy, just having the draft there. So they just had it at Green Bay,
mm-hmm.
with an estimated 600,000 people there. All right. That included a crowd of 220,000 on the third day. So there were still 220,000 on the third day. They projected beforehand a crowd of 250,000. And with that projection, they figured a $94 million economic impact.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had 600,000, so they had to have blown away the $94 million projection. So,
and I think
it's going to bring in so much money in just 3 days.
I think there'll be more than 600,000 people here on the mall.
And it's
let's see what the weather's like, because right. You know the weather here is dicey in April, obviously. But I think they will blow that away,
because it's a lot easier, more accessible than, say, Green Bay, for example. Right?
Yeah, and
people
just,
from New York can come down easy.
And it's just a huge area
Philly
where people
can come here easy. Yeah.
And maybe not everybody's there on the mall, but there'll be so many other people just kind of hanging around in other parts of the city.
Yeah.
I mean, this place is going to be
like
for 3 days.
How many does downtown draw for the fireworks on 4th of July? Like, what are those crowds?
It
at least
like
a couple hundred thousand.
I feel
right?
like the NFL draft's like, bigger than the fireworks.
I feel like more than that.
So I'd have to look that up. The crowds will be that big or bigger.
So the record right now is 775,000.
Where was that?
Detroit.
That was just a couple years ago, right?
Yeah.
All right. So we got a couple years to hype this up, see if we can't break that record.
775,000. That's a big number.
That's over three days.
Okay. Over 3 days.
Oh, so 200K a day, 250 a day. We can easily do that.
That's very doable.
We can easily do that.
Yep.
Seems.
I mean, this city is used to those kinds of things every few years, you know, having huge events
like
downtown.
The Nats parade, the Caps parade.
What about
in
the inauguration?
18-19.
Every 4 years or whatever.
That's what the city's known for.
Fireworks 2023.
Okay.
700,000 people.
There you go. It's going to be more than that.
You think?
Yeah.
Over 3 days, I would say yes. I don't know about for an individual
day. What's the single day record?
It's probably
is
Detroit.
That,
the 750?
For the NFL draft?
Or was that over the 3 days?
That's for the that's the total.
That's the total for 3 days. Yeah.
I would just divide it by three, but
yeah.
As they say, in a single day, the attendance record for the NFL draft set by Detroit, 275,000 in attendance first night.
I think we 2024 draft. We'll beat that.
I think DC can top that number.
I think they will.
Yeah. It's gonna be cool.
I mean, now, if they put 700,000 there for the fireworks, I mean, you're
what's the backdrop?
You're gonna
again? Like, what do you think? Have they already announced that? What
I mean, the it's gonna be on the mall.
So, yeah. I mean, the monument.
Monument's always the backdrop.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many things you could choose from.
Yeah.
Well, your one seat's got the White House, the Washington Monument.
I would think. It always is.
It's the most impressive.
White House is pretty impressive.
It is.
But if there's no place to put all the people.
Yeah, I mean, where are you going
to... Yeah, so it's got to be
the monument.
Yeah.
Well, isn't there a lot of fencing now, too.
Is there a way you could put the stage on the other side so where you can see the monument and the White House?
I don't know. Actually, the most iconic shot would be the Capitol.
Yeah.
If you could somehow incorporate... But that's logistically, security-wise, I don't know if that's really going to be doable.
Yeah.
But Washington Monument's not far behind.
Either way, it's going to be pretty freaking cool. We are going to be the center of the sports universe, certainly for a few days in 2027. And you know what? Got a pretty good football team here to make a run these next couple of years, too.
Well, hopefully the Commanders are picking 32nd in that draft.
Right.
I mean, they've won the Super Bowl the previous year.
I don't want to change the topic, but I listened again to Jay. I just love Jay Gruden. Can we book him at some point? I know he does Grant and Danny all the time. But he did John's show the other day, and he went through the draft and everything. And again, they ask him, what do you expect from Jaden this year? Because I guess my buddy Joe P, who's, you know, pretty big NFL fan, he's convinced that there's going to be a step backwards.
Going to take a step back. The league's going to adjust for Jaden Daniels.
Exactly. And Jay Gruden, who I respect tremendously, doesn't see it.
Right.
Says Jaden can do literally, like, what can he not do?
Right.
He says, if you're Cliff Kingsbury, you literally could have like a 500-play playbook. He could do everything. There's nothing. Jay says if he was coordinating Jaden Daniels, and this is just thinking about Super Bowls and, you know, and the drafts and et cetera. If you're coordinating Jaden Daniels, there's literally not one play that you wouldn't run because he's not capable of doing it. He could do anything. So he doesn't think that there's going to be a drop-off. So we're going to have, hopefully, a contending football team here for years to come. We're going to be hosting the draft. We're going to get a Super Bowl. It caps on a miraculous, you know, hopefully if they get through this series, which I feel like is going to be a challenge, but if they get through this series, I mean, sky's the limit for this hockey team.
Hopefully that's the case. They keep building.
Don't you agree? Sky's the limit for this hockey team.
It's pretty high. I feel like they're being disrespected by the odds makers that everybody's favoring Carolina.
I think it's going to be a very, very challenging series, but if they can get through it, there's no reason to think that they can't just continue with the momentum. It's a super talented team.
Yep, prove it. And back built it correctly.
Back to the NFL draft. According to emails, the league proposed having the main stage for the draft on 4th Street between Madison and Jefferson Drives, which is near the National Gallery of Art and the National Air and Space Museum. A portion also could be held on Pennsylvania Avenue, where attendees could flow to the mall. So those are kind of the initial plans for the NFL draft.
I don't know the National Gallery of Art off the top of my head.
I kind of know where it is, but I haven't been there a lot, I'll be honest.
If it's not on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, it's a miss, in my opinion.
Right.
Because you think of iconic Americana shots,
right
down with the monument in the background.
Yeah, that's a great one.
They have so many great ones to choose from.
It is, but that is the spot. When you think of jam-packed National Mall, you think of that looking out over the reflecting pool.
Yeah, that'd be a great spot, a great view.
They've got
a lot of options.
It's just cool that the city, I mean, I feel like we're gaining some momentum here from a sports perspective.
Getting some street cred out there.
I feel
there.
Like we're getting a little street cred. Because, you know, I don't know. That announcement, when I saw that yesterday, I guess Maskey broke the story. There had been some rumblings. In fact, didn't we talk about it around the draft that eventually the Washington's going to get a draft? It kind of took me by surprise, though, to be honest with you. I didn't think it would happen this quickly.
Yeah, I didn't think it'd be in 2027. I mean,
2027, not that far away.
No. It's two drafts away.
Yeah. We got one. Where is it next year?
Next year, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, you thought it was in New Orleans.
I thought it was in New Orleans. That was my bad. I went out with Chepe and Patricia and said it was
Pittsburgh,
in New Orleans.
And then it's here.
Correct.
Again, as long as the weather's nice, they're going to blow that attendance record out.
You won't
out
look
of water.
At the 2-year forecast to see what the weather's going to be like.
Again, it's a feather in the cap for Josh Harris and the ownership group. So they sent representatives to the 2024 draft in Detroit, and they've turned it around that quickly.
Yeah.
They've got RFK coming, they got a draft coming, got a good team.
It's a respected
team now. Remember the grades? The grades from the NFL.
Oh, yeah, the NFLPA.
They completely turned around their report card.
Yeah, that's what happens when you boot a loser owner out and you replace it with somebody who's competent and it's not their first time owning a sports team. Mm-hmm. Like Josh Harris has done this before. He's done it many times before. And he's competent and he's good at what he does.
I gotta tell you, so far, I had some skepticism when Harris was announced as the owner just because nobody walks on water, you know? But man, so far the guy's pretty much hit a home run in every
everybody they've hired.
Pretty much hit a home run everywhere.
So decisions now, a new stadium draft, going to be a Super Bowl.
It's kind of crazy,
right?
Yep. Took over
heater.
Adam Peters, Dan Quinn, Jaden Daniels, RFK draft.
It's a pretty good run. That's a super heater that he's on.
I don't think the RFK thing is signed, sealed, and delivered yet, but it seems to be going in the right direction.
I'm not
going
to doubt him as far as getting it done and having the influence to make it happen.
Right.
800-636-1067 is the number if you want to weigh in. Remember, we have not one but two pair of tickets to give away to the Washington Capitals Game 1 playoff game coming up tomorrow. So listen for that in the 8 o'clock hour and the 9 o'clock hour. We'll give you a chance to win Caps tickets here on the Junkies.
B. Mitchell Finley, 106.7 The Fan. I want to do a little Commanders talk. We just did a really good baseball conversation there with Mark Zuckerman. If you missed any of that, you should get on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts and just find it. Because it's probably already up. Now, Lanville has a question written down here in his most landfill of ways, but as we kind of know where things land across the NFL, listen, things can always change. You can still work drafts. Like a lot of things can still happen, but generally, by now, you kind of got your team. There will be some changes before week one, but generally, this is what you got. Last year, Washington's defense ranked kind of middle of the pack. They were clearly driven by their offense. Their defense ranked 13th in yards allowed, 18th in points allowed. Both were big jumps from where they had been, bottom five, bottom two for much of the last couple of years.
They were like catfish, bottom feeders.
Yeah. So last year things did improve, but in big moments, at big times, they did struggle. I think they really struggled against the run. Especially against the Eagles. But you know who else struggled against the run against the Eagles?
Everybody.
But whatever, you can't. The goal is to beat them, right? As far as the best defenses in the NFL last year, from a yards perspective, it was Philly. Houston was quite good also. I thought Minnesota had a really good defense as far as just creating turnovers. The Bills created a lot of turnovers.
Detroit did a good job until they saw us.
Well, Detroit just got,
but they got
crushed by injuries.
They got gutted. But, you know, still, got to be able to sustain that sometimes.
What's interesting is how sometimes NFL defensive stuff is more a matter of how the offense plays. You know, The Eagles gave up the second fewest points per game in the NFL, and the Eagles gave up the fewest yards per game in the NFL. That's a hell of a recipe, folks.
Yeah.
The only team that gave up less than Philly points, and this it's really splitting hairs here. The Eagles gave up 17.8 points per game. Mm-hmm. The Chargers gave up 17.7. But Jim Harbaugh also ran his offense like West Point. You know what I mean? Like, they were just trying to control the clock and grind it out. Like, it was an interesting first year from Harbaugh out there, and you know, they were good. They made the playoffs. I've done a deep dive on this back when I used to write a lot, how hard defensive rankings are to replicate year over year over year. Because a huge chunk of defense is generating turnovers. Mm-hmm. And generating turnovers is really hard to predict.
Yeah.
Some of it is as simple as which way a fumble bounces.
True. But if you're consistent with putting your ball your helmet on the ball and grab a guy, wrap up. Don't just try to grab the ball without wrapping up because he ends up going for the whole way. But you wrap up and then somebody else comes and they put head on the ball. Or if you're better in coverage, where you play man coverage, you get a little tighter. You get those things. You know, but the pass rush is most consistent in turnovers, I believe. If you get great pass rush and you can also stop the run with that rush, you can affect people because you get to points where you hit the quarterback when he's trying to throw the ball. You hit the quarterback and the running back together at their mesh point, and it changes everything.
Well, to that point then, B, we have seen Washington make some big moves to try to improve their team. The big moves primarily have been offensively.
Yeah.
You're talking a trade for a new left tackle that cost you a bunch of draft picks, mm-hmm. A trade for a wide receiver that didn't cost you much, guaranteed some money. And then your first round pick goes to the O-line also. Yeah. Now, they did take a corner with the second round pick mm-hmm. that a lot of people really, really like. But they largely did not overhaul the defensive line. They lost John Allen. They lost Dante Fowler. You add Kinlaw, and I know people got up in arms about the money with Kinlaw. One, you overpay in free agency. That's just how it goes. Mm-hmm. Two, he's like a tier three defensive lineman money. Like, it's not that much money.
Yeah.
You know, they've brought in some veteran pieces to play along the defensive line, but you're talking about pass rush.
Mm-hmm.
Pass rush generally is the best way to have a dominant defense.
Totally.
Period. Are you concerned with what they've done there?
I'm not concerned at this point because I watched them last year generate pass rush with what they had. And I think that they didn't go gung-ho because they feel comfortable with some of the guys they brought on and some guys that came on at the end of the year last year. I also believe that if your offense is much better and you could put more points on the board and you could take more time off the clock, you change another team's offense and you make them play how you want them to play, all right? Which in turn gives your defense a level of an advantage. So if Washington ups their points per game by 2-3 points, the other team has to put the ball in the air more often. They have to try to score more often, which means that they're one-dimensional. So like you mentioned, like, it all helps. Like, you know, when they play complementary football, that means the offense is doing such a good job that they make the defense job easy. Guess what else the defense is?
Rested.
Fresh and rested.
Commanders finished 5th in points scored last year. They averaged just under 29 points per game.
Mm-hmm.
7th in total yards, 4th in first downs. A lot of long, long drives for Washington last year, which was a big part of their success.
Mm-hmm.
I don't disagree with you, right? Like, I think Adam Peters looked at everything going on this offseason and said, to me, the further we get past it, it becomes kind of clear he didn't love this draft class.
I don't think a lot of people did.
As a overall scope of it, because you traded away a bunch of picks, and then when you were in the draft, you never once traded back to get more picks. This was not a pinata he wanted to hit more often.
I don't think it was about the picks. I don't think it's as much about the picks as it's the quality of the picks. If they had more quality of a pick and people, but this draft was so even where many people didn't want to move.
Right. I think that Amos was there at 61 made it really easy.
Mm-hmm.
But like last year they traded back because I think they wanted volume of guys to get into their program.
Yeah.
But they also really liked the next batch of guys there. I'm not sure they did because they never once tried to move back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think year over year over year, pick a good offense. Not the best, but like just a team that's had a pretty good offense over the years. Houston? Miami? I'm not saying like the Chiefs or the Ravens, but let's go to the Rams, right? They've been pretty good with Stafford. Mm-hmm. So if you just look year over year over year, what these teams do, it's way easier is not the right word. It's significantly, though, more sustainable to build and keep an offense good, especially if you have a quarterback.
If you have a quarterback, yes, and then also the rules of football makes that easier.
Right, but I'm saying
they are so heavily swayed towards the offense.
So if you have to invest, what did we say coming out of the championship game loss in Philly? That Washington has to figure out how to improve their lines,
mm-hmm.
the lines on both sides
Big
of the
boys.
Ball. That's where they got to get better, and they identified the offensive line as the place they were going to really zero in on. And I think you can make a case that it makes more sense.
Well, the offensive line, I would say yes, because who's the most important person in football? Quarterback.
Right.
Don't you have a good one? So if you could keep him more upright, if he was able to do the things he did with the line last year trying to come together, if you have a better one protecting him in front of him, he can do a lot more. And I think if you strengthen your offense, you strengthen your football team. Because they get way more than defenses get.
Totally. I know that people have edge angst. The edge angst is going nowhere, but I think this all makes a lot of sense,
mm-hmm.
On a lot of levels, honestly. And I don't know that they have enough. We won't know until we see it next mm-hmm. year. But I would not have wanted to be on the hook for the very few, to me, attractive free agents and the money they got anyway. Like, Milton Williams could be really good. You heard Zangaro say it. He's like, but man, he really hasn't played much to now be a nine-figure dude. Mm-hmm. Like, hey. Free agency ain't the place to shop. You know, it's just generally, now that the cap has gone up so much, and these teams use these tags all the time, and teams have gotten way smarter about extensions. You don't want to be shopping in free agency. It's not to say you can't, but that's why the trade market has increased so much. So when Landfill asked me, is the Commanders defense bad? I don't think it is. I think defenses have so much variance year to year. They believe in what they've done on the edges to be able to at least somewhat replicate last year where they were still top half of the league in sacks. If it's mm-hmm. strictly about sacking the opposing quarterback, I think you're going to be all right.
You just got to get pressure on him sometimes, too.
Now, if it's strictly about going to Caps game one, you better listen to the next segment.
But let's get to the news of the day because it is gigantic. The NFL draft is coming to Washington, D.C. This is going to be one of the great sporting events that has ever been hosted in this city. And in terms of the number of people that will come to D.C. to enjoy an event, this is about as big as it gets. You could maybe compare it to a Super Bowl or a World Cup or something like that. But you've seen the NFL Draft's traveling roadshow the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
We just saw the aerial shots of, over the span of a full weekend, over 1 million people descending upon a town with a couple hundred thousand in Green Bay, right? DC, on the mall, destination location, people being able to go tour museums and do things. This will be the spring break location for everyone across America that's a football fan. Families will be coming here and spending days, I'm sure. It's an amazing thing for the city, for the business of DC, but in our little world here, more importantly.
Yeah.
Huge deal for us here at 106.7 The Fan and for football fans like myself and Danny. Roger Goodell making the announcement just minutes ago over at the White House.
The draft has really become one of the great entertainment and sports events. Just a week ago in Green Bay, we had over 600,000 people attend. The year before in Detroit, we had close to 800,000. As the president remarked, we believe we'll be well over a million when we come here to D.C. in 2027. So we not only believe it's a great site, we believe it's consistent with what the president said, which is investing in our communities, investing specifically here in the nation's capital, one that I grew up here in Washington, D.C., and is particularly important. We think we can have a tremendous impact on this community, and it will not just be an event. It will be something that will show the world how far the nation's capital has come and where it's going. So we're very excited about that.
Roger Goodell's getting used to that Amtrak route down 95, huh? Because he was here for the stadium announcement a week ago. Now he's here for this announcement. There's going to be all kinds of other stadium things and draft things he's going to have to do here in D.C. But the owner of the Washington Commanders was in the Oval Office as well. What a week for Josh Harris. 1 week ago, he gets a deal struck with the mayor to try to bring football back to D.C. Now he's got to get some votes from city council. And today, he delivers on what has been a multi-year effort by his ownership group. I mean, I first heard from members of the organization probably 6 months ago that they were closing in on the NFL draft. But this has been a full year of really feeling like they were getting closer and closer. And today they were able to get it done.
What a great day for Washington. I mean, to host the NFL draft in 2027 on the Mall, I believe we'll get over a million people, and it's going to be an amazing day, and it'll showcase what Washington's all about. But it'll also showcase what our country's all about. Washington is the gateway city to our country. And, you know, it'll be an amazing day, and we can't wait to get started. And I couldn't have done it without my partners, Roger Goodell, thank you, and Mayor Muriel Bowser. And we're ready to get to work. And I can't imagine RFK coming back. I grew up here. DC used to stop and on Sundays, and everyone would be inside watching football, or everyone would be glued at the stadium. And so we want to bring that back. And football really is as existential to the culture of America. We all love it. We all watch it. And it brings people together. And so what a great way to celebrate the United States of America, the NFL, and the Washington Commanders. And President Trump, we leave on your desk a Trump jersey. You are the ultimate commander.
Josh Harris at the White House today making the big announcement.
It was such a strange sight, by the way. People with all sorts of, you know, different backgrounds, invested interests, just sort of standing up there like it was the most normal thing in the world. I think about all the years of Snydering where everything was terrible and he couldn't do it. And they couldn't get a stadium. They couldn't make any headway. They were persona non grata. He was just outside looking in. And again, it's just mile markers. The president of the United States referenced, like, you guys have such a nice quarterback. He's a good player. What is happening?
Very surreal.
We're the cool kid.
Yeah.
People need to understand this. The big takeaway isn't that, I mean, the draft is here and it's awesome. It's going to come to town. This organization, this city, no longer are we the team where you just go to commercial break before the pick. You're like, and also ran cannon fodder and embarrassment, the laughing stock. Look at all the things that are happening. Nobody smells better than us. We've got all the threads. We're all dudded up. We're studs. Everybody loves us right now. And I like that.
It's nice.
Yeah.
I'm listening to that clip and watching it, and I'm going, that's my owner. That's my owner right there. He's getting me a stadium in the city. He's going to try his best. He's getting me an NFL draft. He's making moves. Mm-hmm. He's making things happen. But this is a significant day. So kudos to Josh Harris and his ownership group and the team. This is massive for them. Obviously, the city, the mayor's on a bit of a heater here, if I could say that.
Yeah.
Between the press conference last week with the stadium, now this, she's heating up NBA Jam style on the sports front. The rest of you can sort out the rest as however you'd like to. And then the NFL and Goodell, because I got to say that this is the best location for a draft, though, by the way. It's cool when they do it in Kansas City at some, you know, railroad tracks or whatever the theme was there. It's going to be neat when they do it in Pittsburgh. I don't even know where it is going to be in Pittsburgh, but I'm sure bridges and things in the foreground, the background. There is not a better aesthetic. There is not a more beautiful look. There is nothing more powerful or influential or significant to this city than if you're doing something on the Mall with the monument behind you and the U.S. Capitol right there. and the White House off in the distance and some of those aerial shots, you're not going to do it better than Washington, D.C. Sorry, yeah, it's so, just not going to be done better.
And that's the deal.
And if you're the league to get a million people to come down to the mall, it's awesome. So today you go to the White House and you build a bridge. By the way, I think the relationship that you need there is significant as a storyline here, because there's some, I guess, fear that maybe federally there could be obstacles, that if there's involvement outside of D.C., you know, in the White House with the stadium, that it could be a problem. So you get over there, you build some bridges, you build some relationships, mm-hmm. you high-five some people, you say some nice things, and the relationship maybe helps you finish the stadium as well.
Yeah.
I don't think those two things are completely undone. I think they're intertwined.
Yeah, I think they're related. I don't know exactly how or what the connection is, but it's too coincidental for me. Now, I understand there's a lot of work that went in beforehand to get the draft here. So, you know, but just the fact that there's an announcement within a week of stadium type stuff getting done, too hard for me to ignore. I mean, you think about how complicated DC is, though, just as a quick side to kind of illustrate your point. There are a bunch of spots in DC where if you walk 100 yards, you could be in three different kind of jurisdictions, right? The federal city, parks department, or just DC proper, where, you know, you're not sure who's going to cuff you and stuff if you're doing something wrong. You need all sorts of permits and approvals and all these different obstacles when you're doing stuff that's there on federal parkland or that spills over into the city. Everybody's got to be on board pulling the rope in the same direction. That was always thought to be one of those big obstacles, right? Where you're going, we'd like to have it there, but you need this permit or that permit. And the only issue those usually for, you know, super giant marches or inaugurations or whatever. And now you've got the NFL working in conjunction with everybody. City's on board, you know, Parks Department in theory is on board. All the feds are on board. Everybody's in on it. And it looks good.
But think about this for a second. The stadium was a non-starter before this sale. It could not have happened, period. But it certainly was off the table in the nation's capital, where everybody wanted it to be. Yeah? The NFL draft was not coming to Washington, D.C. when Dan Snyder was the owner, or if he was still the owner. Wasn't happening. Roger Goodell's not doing a press conference, standing next to Dan Snyder for any reason. Certainly to give D.C. the great benefit of an NFL draft over other deserving teams. Wouldn't be happening. So you've got these possibilities, these events, these amazing things taking place for the organization. And oh, by the way, the team that hadn't won 11 games in 30 years, the team that hadn't been to an NFC championship game since your boy was 2 in a diaper, was just in one and just ripped off 14 dubs last year. It's a new world, people. It's just so fun. It is cool to see that we're the cool kid, that we're wearing the members only jacket, that the commissioner's getting on the train to come down to D.C. to make announcements with the Commanders left and right over the last calendar week. Get used to it, because times have changed, and it's no longer embarrassing to be a fan of this football team.
That's the summary. I think I try every once in a while to smell the roses, especially because there's no football games. Like, we didn't lose to the Cowboys this week, or the Eagles beat us the NFC title game or something like that. And I can think about how far we've already come from the moment where we all read that tweet that finally Dan Snyder, who was still trying to hold on to the thing in the 11th hour, we now know that officially, when it finally was rustled away from that little twerp, and the sale is happening, he faxed that letter, we wished the Harris Group well, et cetera, et cetera. From that moment, look at the renaissance. Look at it. Go in every department, in every area, by any measure, you would say, not just an improvement, because it's easy to improve from a negative. It's easy to improve from zero. It's easy to improve from the worst. But a dramatic and substantive rocket ship up into the stratosphere towards not only normalcy, not only decency, but excellence.
Yeah.
Things that were not possible. Now, not only are they possible, it's just this is what's normal now. Just winning stuff. It's tremendous.
Here's the question I want to ask people on the phones next at 800-636-1067. And I want to get your answer on this in a moment too, Danny. I am so elated about having the draft. I'm giddy. I will take my children. I will go at least to the first day. I'll probably go to two of the 3 days. I could see us hanging out there on a Saturday when it's not as busy or whatever. By then, my young guy that's coming along this summer, that isn't born yet, he'll be a couple years old, so he'll be out there. But my four-year-old, I mean, he's going to be wearing jerseys and loving life, and he'll know some of the college prospects, I bet. It's going to be a blast. I can't wait. But I grew up loving the draft and going to the draft. I went to the Javits Center. I went to the Radio City Music Hall. I've been to this event several times. It's one of my favorites.